cause we got the alternative energy. Behind me, kill our free autonomy.
And welcome to the Radioactive Show, produced at the studios of 3CR Melbourne and heard nationally on the Community Radio Network.
Morena, and welcome to the Radioactive Show. I'm your host, Yo, and this week we bring you a special episode from Gugatha Country. We'll be hearing from Aunty Shirley Jenna and her son Josh, recorded during the September Rockholes trip. Their kōrero speaks to the deep and ongoing relationship between land, kin, culture and health. The stories shared today are family stories, intimate and grounded in cultural continuance. Our deep thanks to Aunty Shirley and Josh for your generosity. We hope that listening draws you, our audience, closer into the intimacy and responsibility of protecting country, culture, and family. After all, is there anything more valuable in this world? This episode contains discussion of Aboriginal people who have passed and touches on the ongoing impacts of the stolen generations. Please listen with care and take all the time you need. First, we'll hear from Aunty Shirley. Sitting together out at Googs Lake, a salt lake held in the red dunes and scrublands of Gugatha country. Sitting under the little shade we can find, sipping on tea as the morning fire warms up everyone's breakfast, the sky almost too big above us and the white salt surface reflecting everything back. Aroha nui kia tātou. Here is Aunty Shirley.
I'm here sitting with Aunty Shirley at the beautiful Googs Lake. And Aunty Shirley, could you introduce yourself for our listeners and bit about maybe who you are, what country you belong or countries you belong to, and what brings you out to the Rockhole trip?
My name is Shirley Jenner and I was brought up in Water Vale, South Australia, not acknowledging my culture because my mum had grown up over near Penong and she had been teased, etc., etc. So she moved over our way to Claire to help her mother out with looking after the other younger members of the family. And she worked as an Aboriginal maid and then just as a maid and ended up in Water Vale. Meanwhile, while she was there, her younger brothers and sister were forcibly taken away and put in Coonabba Mission. Which upset her greatly, but she sent all the money she could back to her mummy, as she called her, to try and help her out, because without a white father they were considered not liable source to be out in the wild. And the fact that grandma didn't have any money coming in, so that was the situation. So my mum, and I've got her memoirs, she wrote to members of the parliament, and with the help of a couple of old teachers, the Miss Fords, they wrote to parliament and that, and they ended up getting the boys and Auntie Betty out of Coonabba. And what happened was a couple of them were old enough to join the army. The next one, he went and worked on a farm at Truro until he was old enough to work, to join the army. And Uncle Hartley, I've got a book with me called Down the Hole. Uncle Hartley's story was incredible because between my grandmother and my great-grandmother, Eva, full-blooded, they hid Uncle Hartley in a hole under a tree, so that when the people came from government to round up the Aboriginal children, he was always hidden. But when he was 10 years old, he was sent over to my mum because by that time my mum had married. Mm-hmm. So about 1942, my mum had married and had a little boy. And so Hartley came over and lived with her and she schooled him then at Waterville Primary. And the others, Auntie Betty, she came to Auburn with an Uncle Malcolm and they got schooled. They were the youngest again, and they got schooled at Auburn Primary School and on to high school. Then they went their merry ways. But most of the most of my mum's brothers ended up in the army. One uncle ended up being a sergeant major, and he fought in four different conflicts altogether. And his children, his boys, all followed him as well into the army. So one of my things I need to do next year is take some cultural leave and type out my mum's memoirs. She got up to the year 1942, and some of the stories in there are just unbelievable. We used to, as children, we had a cousin come to live with us when I was six and my sister was four, and he was in between us. And we would have, now I know it, not storytelling, it was yarning. And because we were in the white world, we knew nothing of our Aboriginal background. And so we would love listening to our mum's stories about how they'd have to go and fetch water, and the older children, her being one of the older children, had to go once or every other day, I think, and fetch water and back into Penang to the windmill there, but not where the windmill farm is now. I was lucky enough to see the old windmill area where they used to have to go. Sometimes they'd have a horse and dray, sometimes they'd have a donkey and a dray, and they'd fill up all their kerosene tins with water to last them for the next couple of days. And my grandfather, although he was born in Adelaide, he was a white man, and he came over shooting rabbits and had a nasty accident when he was only 19, and we were lucky enough to find the paper clipping of it, and he shot his leg getting through a fence while rabbit hunting, and they rushed him from Penang down to Port Lincoln, which was the nearest hospital, and by the time he got there, gangrene had set in, so he lost a leg. But I think he was a remarkable pioneer, because he had a wife and all these children, and he was a scrubber, so he would a farmer would hire him to go into a paddock of scrub, and he would go into the middle of it, he'd clear a little bit there, and they'd build their house out of kerosene tins. They'd cut them open so that'd be the outside, and they'd cart their stones, because that was their fireplace inside, and they'd hang hessian bags to make up rooms. And my mum would say that when it was hot, they'd wet the hessian bags so that the breeze would make the house all nice and cool, because it was only made out of thin kerosene tins. And then they had to save as many as they could for carting water as well. So some of these stories that she used to tell was just remarkable. And we started having a family reunion about 10 years ago, and I sat down with cousins. I'm one of 53 first cousins, so, you know, quite a few of us. So there was quite a few there at this thing, and I started telling my cousins about some of these stories my mum told us, and they said, "We know nothing of this." And I just said, "Well, we would sit down nightly and we would talk about it." And it was just fascinating to listen to how she grew up, and sometimes there'd be three of them riding a donkey to go to school, because her schooling was either at a school nearby or they did correspondence. But they're under the watchful eye of the two Miss Fords, who end up living in Auburn, who helped them with all their education and that. So my mum was an avid reader. She loved reading about the country. She loved reading about people's stories.
Everybody, can you be ready in half an hour?
Not novelists or anything, but just all those sort of stories. And one of her little things, and I have got a stone to take back and put on her grave, if anybody was going anywhere, she'd say, "Bring me a stone back." And so she ended up with all these stones, hundreds and hundreds, which were placed around her grave. So I've got one to take back, because taking it back to her, because this is her country that she grew up in. My sister and I discovered later in life, about when we met Auntie Susie at a wedding, we decided that we were part of the stolen generation too, but we could see why our mother had done it, because she just didn't want us to be taken away from her like her brothers and sisters were. I think, yeah, we all know my mum was a very strong lady, very strong Christian lady. And I know right up until she died, that had an effect on her that she couldn't stop those children from being taken away and put into Kurupa Mission. Last time I was over here, my son Josh and I, we had a couple of days to ourselves with the twins, and we went back to the mission because I wanted to see where the old stone building had been. We found the rubble, and then we just wandered around and we came across the cemetery, and that was just absolutely amazing. Mm-hmm. The other story I'd like to tell is about my mum's older sisters were a set of twins. They were called Alice and Winnie, and Alice died when she was a baby within 3 months, but my mum can remember Winnie being an older girl looking after her when she was younger, and I believe Winnie died when she was 10. Now, they lived near Penong then, and when Alice died as a baby, they wanted to bury her in the Penong cemetery, but it was a white man's cemetery, so they couldn't. So what they did, they buried her on the outsides of the cemetery under some big stones. And then when Winnie died about 10 years later, that's where they buried her as well, with her twin, because they believed the spirits had to be together. So when we were over there visiting Grandfather Frederick's grave and my Uncle Hartley's grave, I said to Josh, let's walk around and see if we can find where these big stones. And we came to one part of the corner, and I said, look, Josh, I think logically, Grandma would have buried her husband as closest to the twins that she could have. Mm-hmm. So we picked the spot, and Josh came over and he dug at the soil and he said, yeah, there's stone under here, Mum. And I said, well, that's where the twins are buried, under there. Mm-hmm. So that's just how people were back in that day. Yeah. I won't say they were racist, but it was just you were either one colour or the other.
Yeah.
And I guess that's what Mum was protecting my sister and me.
Yeah.
And I'm very lucky that my children have really blessed the culture. They're all wanting to learn about it, especially Josh.
What does it mean for you that your kids are blessing the culture, well, and taking up the learnings? Like, what's that, how's that impacted you?
It makes me feel really blessed, especially it's into the next generation too. Like, these two little ones are going to go back. They're going to be, yeah. But Isla, another granddaughter, she speaks a little bit of language, the Ralkan language down there. And, especially her. She would love to come over here and do all this. She would just love to see some of the sights and everything. And, for me, for my children to be part of our culture means so much, because they can understand things from a different, because they've all had a good education, which I didn't have, which my mum didn't have, but we made the best of what was given to us. But they've got that education behind them, so they can go and sort out. And I know many, many years ago, Josh and I went down to it was the Lutheran Archives, and we went through some books and everything, and we've been to the museum in Adelaide as well, looking just for information and anything we could find, and come home with some stuff. And that's where we started. I reckon he must have been doing a project at school, and I said, oh, let's do a trip to Adelaide and do this and get this information, because back then we didn't know much about, because Mum never told us much. And I guess to find out like that, but then talking to cousins, and they, we know we're Aboriginal, but, yeah, we haven't done anything about it. Yeah. There's been a couple that's tried to find out more information and that, but I think we were very, very lucky that my grandmother loved having photos taken. Mm. And I've got lots of pictures of old Morty and family, and one that I've worked out to be 1935 would have been the day they buried my grandfather at Penong. And they're all dressed up in their Sunday best. And she's standing there with her brother Ralph and all the O'Loughlin children. But I can pick all my aunties and uncles out. But by the time that photo was taken, my oldest auntie, Hilda, had gone down to
to the grandfather's side of the family in Adelaide to live, and because she was quite pale in the skin. And that was so that she couldn't be taken away earlier in life. And I remember at my Auntie Violet's funeral in Auburn, and I can't remember the date, Uncle Hartley was there, the youngest one, and Auntie Hilda, the oldest one, and she came up and she said, "You must be my baby brother. I've never met you." And that was really, really sad. Didn't mean much to me then because I was a lot younger, but now I think about that, how families were just taken apart. And Uncle Hartley, he became an alcoholic, and he went away to war, worked in the railways, but he was an alcoholic. And but he came over back to Ceduna. He came back to Homelands that he worked here, and they called him the good job man. Good job man. If you say to any of the older people, "Oh, Hartley Clothier, I'm related to him. Oh, he's a good job man." When Josh and I, there was a couple of carloads of us pulled up at Coonabah there one day, and we were just having a look. This is before we did the first trip with Auntie Sue out to the first rock there. We pulled up and we were just looking, and this lovely old man came over and said to Josh, "Who are you, Mob?" And Josh said, "Oh, O'Loughlin." "Oh, yeah, yeah." You know, like that. And Josh said, "Hartley Clothier, uncle." And he said, "Oh, good job, man." His name up on War Memorial over there. So we all went over and took photos of it. So that was lovely.
Next we hear from Shirley's son Josh around the campfire. Kids running about and toasting marshmallows. You're going to hear them on the recording. So be prepared for that. Josh and I found a little nook off to the side to have a yarn.
My name's Josh Anna. I'm Kukutha. I'm here at camp with Auntie Sue Mob. Auntie Sue's my mum's cousin. So all the Kukutha side all go through that.
And how's it been? When did you start coming out on the Rockhole trips?
My first trip was April last year, so I've only been on two. But I was sort of been talking to Sue for a couple of years before that to try and come out on country and learn more of our culture. When my husband
passed away, they didn't wait. And how's that been coming out on country and?
So when you talk to people back home, I say how it's such a special feeling coming on your own country, especially after working in APY Lands for like 4 years. Learning their culture and being on their country and not know my own culture is really, it's just really special. It's a feeling you can't really explain in a sense.
It's very special. And what's important for you and your family about protecting this country?
I think, it's about, I suppose, preserving it for the future so that, you know, my kids can learn the culture and practice the culture. Because I never got to, I've only sort of started learning my culture in the last 4 or 5 years, so that's why I'm getting them out now, so that they can start learning about and start protecting the land, so that it's there for the future, and so that these special places aren't forgotten.
And you're a teacher yourself, an educator.
Yep.
What's it like, you know, being out on country as the classroom and learning culture this way?
Well, that's actually something I'm kind of my niche, I suppose, in education, is like culture responsiveness and culture responsive pedagogy. So I did my master's in Aboriginal studies in 2020 and did a thesis around culture responsiveness in the APY lands. And I'm currently just starting my PhD where I'll do some weave culture responsive pedagogy into it, because that's about how we can incorporate culture into teaching, so that those Aboriginal students are more engaged and there's a better outcome, but also for the non-Aboriginal students are able to learn those kinds of cultural values and things like that, and to support not just though that mob they're with, but also other mob around Australia.
Yeah, incredible. And your, was there anything from your master's thesis that you learnt, found out, or has informed, is informing going into the PhD?
I think a lot of it's around a lot of the programs that the government, the federal government's has implemented, and how a lot of them haven't worked. One in particular was the Roy School Attendance Strategy, especially in the lands where the strategies they put in place didn't work. And I believe a lot of that is because they're not listening to the right people. They listen to those yes people all the time to, so that the government can sort of essentially do what they think they want, rather than listen to those that actually fight for things like Aunty Susie or even like I'm becoming.
Mm. Yeah. And what's it like bringing your kids out on country for the first time?
It was, yeah, like exciting, but I was also nervous about, you know, them being out in complete openness. You know, and my anxiety was saying about worrying about them running away or going too far, or, you know, a dingo coming and getting during the night or something like that. Like, so, but yeah, even though, you know, they're tired and getting grumpy, it's still just really special to be here with them, and then also with Mum. It's not just, you know, I might get annoyed by them, by Mum sometimes as well. It's still, yeah, special to have all three of us generations here learning together.
Yeah. And what's the kind of, when we're thinking about people setting off rockets and testing them and on your country, what's that kind of like, I guess, the more spiritual or emotional impact for you guys? Or for you even, if you want to speak on your own behalf.
I think there's obviously that worry about, you know, the rockets falling and hitting some of those sacred and important parts, and ruining it forever. Like, you know, and happening the same as what happened to Dugong Gorge, where, you know, the miners built it all up. Like, it just once again is the government not listening to the right people. And, you know, I support all the things the government do, but not when they're not listening to the right people and the right Aboriginal people and those who actually care for the country and actually know about the country, rather than those who grew up in the concrete jungle or things like that and actually might not have an understanding of that culture and the importance of it.
And what have you noticed, like, about your own, I don't know, self or health or way of being in the world since you've been able to learn and connect more with your own culture?
What were you even talking about?
I think it's certainly coming out here certainly helps my mental health, especially around anxiety. But I think just being able to think about, like, when I'm in, you know, might have those anxious moments in general, or the, you know, other issues, I can think about the culture and think about what the ancestors would have done and how they would have dealt with those kind of situations.
Yeah. What are you kind of committed to in your lifetime around protecting your country?
The analogy of leaving something how you found it, or even better.
Yeah.
So it's around when we're out here, or, you know, not even out here, but like ensuring that the country is better than what it was, whether that means clean all the rock holes and getting rid of all the dirt that's blown in or whatever, or things like that. It's, yeah, it's just about preserving it all.
Yeah.
So it looks the best and pristine.
Yeah.
You need to go into town for any roots.
My kids' life and all that, and my family's life as well.
And was there like a point that you recall of being like, oh, I want to go back to my own lands?
Yeah, whatever you mean.
Like, when did that kind of come into your consciousness, or was it always there?
No, I think probably like 2 or 3 years in, so probably like 2018, 2019, And I sort of, had that realisation that I'm learning all Anangu or Pinindara culture and don't know my own, and was a bit jealous how they get to grow up like that. And also because they knew I was kukawa down here, a lot of them, said I was their brother, and so there's also connection to Yalata as well. So just through that as well, made me really want to explore that culture a lot more.
Yeah. Beautiful. Is there anything else you want to yarn about on the radioactive show?
No.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
He mihi aroha, he mihi nui ki a kōrua, Auntie Shirley Raua ko Josh. Thank you for trusting us with your stories. They speak to the ongoing experience of being displaced and fighting to remain in relationship with culture and with country. Thank you for sharing what is painful and also what is held with so much love. Kia u, kia mau, kia ora te whenua, kia ora tātou. Hold fast, keep close, for the land lives and so do we. That is us for this week, I te whānau. Now a little outro with one of the best, Ani Sheena featuring Jim Reeves.
Let's pretend that we're together, all alone. I'll tell the man to turn the jukebox way down low. And you can tell your friend there with you, she'll have to go.
I'll tell the man to turn the jukebox way down low. And you can tell your friend there with you, he'll have to go. Whisper to me, tell me do you love me true? Or is he holding you the way I do? Though love is blind, make up your mind, I've got to know. Should I hang up, or will you tell him he'll have to go? You can't say the words I want to hear while you're with another man. Do you want me answer yes or no? Darling, I will understand.
She'll have to go.
She'll have to go.